How to get up when you have fallen. We come to verse 4 in David's great confession. Psalm 51, the sinner's guide, as it's been called, the backslider's prayer. Looking at this first section in verses 1 to 9 on confession. Look at verse 4. Against you and you only I have sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are justified when you speak and blameless when you judge. What? He's not most concerned about what his sin did against Uriah, Bathsheba's husband that David had murdered, what he did to Bathsheba, the child in her womb now that was born to die, the nation David was called to lead, all the people that he had failed, that will now suffer the bitter consequences of their king's sin. No, friends, every sin is vertical, first and foremost. Every time you break the law of God, every time you transgress against his will, no matter how many others are also affected horizontally, at its root, every sin is a violation of the first and greatest commandment, a failure to love the Lord your God completely. God is the only person who has been in the room with you every single time you have sinned. He has a front row seat at every occasion of your iniquity. He watches you in the act. Spurgeon says of David here, all his wrongdoing centered, it culminated and came to a climax at the foot of the divine throne. The penitent's heart was so filled with a sense of the wrong done to the Lord himself that all other confession was swallowed up in a broken-hearted acknowledgement of offense against God. The prodigal, Luke 15, what were his first words to his father? Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. Paul in Romans 3:23, we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. We haven't reflected him as we ought. We violated his original design for us to live in his likeness and to display his glory. First and second Kings, what's the theme over and over again? What makes every bad king so bad? He did what was evil in the sight of not his advisors, his wives, his sons, his nation, but in the sight of God. In contrast to what kept Joseph pure when he was sorely tempted, right? Sexual sin, Potiphar's wife, day after day enticing him. He didn't give in like David did because he feared God. He says, how then could I do this great sin and evil against God? Genesis 39:10. 2 Corinthians chapter 7 warns us all about these two differing kinds of repentance, worldly sorrow compared to godly sorrow, false repentance compared to true repentance, short-lived, shallow, fake, pretend repentance that's a mere outward show compared to true, lasting, fruit-bearing repentance. The fundamental difference is worldly sorrow is manward. Oh, I got caught. I got fired. I got fined. I got jailed. It's Pharaoh repentance. It's King Saul faith repentance. It's false repentance of Judas. No, true repentance is Godward. And at essence, like Peter after denying Christ, like David here in Psalm 51, it's your commands I've disobeyed, Lord. It's your glory I've stolen. It's your authority that I've assaulted. It's your rule that I've rebelled against. It's your wisdom and goodness. It's your creation that I have defiled. MacArthur says, human accountability will never take you further than divine accountability. Now, at Antioch, we're all about holding each other accountable in very specific ways, and membership, and small groups, and church discipline, and so forth. But you and I know, if you don't fear God, you'll find a way to sin, and you can lie and hide it for a long time before man, but not before the Almighty. Verse 4, against you and you only I have sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are justified when you speak and blameless when you judge. I'm guilty as charged, Lord, without excuse, no alibi, no blame shifting, no argument, no complaint. Notice here, not a whiff of making excuses from David. None of those typical gripes. I'm disappointed with you, God. Life's not fair. I'm a victim of this, that, or the other. No, David owns up to his sin, takes full responsibility takes the big log, that huge plank out of his own eye first, as Jesus taught us in Matthew 7. 10 times now in 4 verses, verses 1 through 4, David has used the personal pronoun, me, my, I. That's a sign of a sinner ready for salvation, or a backslidden believer, truly repentant, a child of God who's ready to be restored to his Lord, a saint that is truly broken. What is the one thing that stood between David's sin and David's confession? What did it take to get David from hiding and covering his sin with all he did with Uriah to Psalm 51, being broken and repentant? How did he get there? How will you get there? How will you help others get there? The same way every time. Reaching this point of true Godward repentance. Often through a faithful friend or preacher or counselor or discipler or mentor or family member who would confront us, as Nathan did in the very title of this psalm. Imagine if you went to the Gettys or Bob Coughlin or Stuart Townend with your confession of wicked sin and moral failure, and God used it to turn it into a song sung by saints around the world for the next 3,000 years. That's what's happening here with Psalm 51 and the life of David. And until Christ calls us home or comes again, we will never outgrow Psalm 51. It's sad. Some Christians think this is just an Old Testament attitude. It's not something that we should pray today, this side of the cross. I wonder how you would answer that. That's wrong. We'll look at more of this tomorrow.